Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development for Wednesday, June 5th, and likely the very last time we'll get to be together during the regular session. This is also our last opportunity to do our sort of survey of significant and important industries around Oregon, and we're going to open an informational meeting on bioscience industry. We're glad that Dennis McNanny is here as Executive Director of the Oregon Bioscience Association. He's brought with him an august group who's going to help this group understand the state and potential of the industry in Oregon. So, Mr. McNanny, we'll turn it over to you.
I appreciate the opportunity, Chair, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I think we've come a long ways in the last 2 years trying to educate folks about bioscience. It is a difficult industry at times to get your hands around, but we want to try to demystify that a little bit today. One of the jobs that I have is trying to communicate a real success story in Oregon that just isn't well enough known. What I want to point to is some statistics briefly, and I'll focus in on, I think, the statistics that most matter. I could talk about the fact that it's a $4.4 billion industry in the state, that it tends to be very sticky once companies locate and build facilities here. They stay here for a long time. But one of the statistics that struck me when it was first made known 2 years ago, when the employment growth came out, in this publication, which is a Battelle publication, where they measure every state against the same NAICS codes across the board. There we are. One of the things that I learned that maybe I should have known, because I hear a lot about Texas, Massachusetts, and California as benchmark states that people compare us to, we actually outgrew them in total employment in bioscience. As documented by an independent third party. And I found that staggering because while someone will say we'll never be San Francisco, I would counter that just let me do that kind of growth long enough and we will be like San Francisco. So I thought the challenge today was to bring companies down that could give you some sort of feel for where that growth's occurring and some of the advantages Oregon has, and unfortunately some of the disadvantages we face as we try to continue this trend of growth. The companies represent various sectors. Each company will get a chance to tell them you about their company, their history, their product, and then a little bit about their experiences of doing business in Oregon. And what you'll find is that there are some real strengths Oregon has that we intend on leveraging over the next 5 to 10 years to try to grow in those specific areas. The first company that I'm going to invite up to the podium is perhaps one of the best kept secrets in Oregon, Biotronic. Some of you may have heard their story from me, but trust me, Juergen is much more versed in telling the story than I am. So please welcome Juergen to the testify.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee. I'm really proud to be here today, and I'm glad to talk about what we do. I think, as Dennis said, we're probably one of the best kept secrets here. And I want to start off with, you know, showing you a product. In fact, it's really small, and we work hard to make it small and make it even smaller.
And so I need to interrupt for just a second and have you start with your name for the record.
Oh,
please.
Sorry, Juergen Lindner.
Thank you.
General Manager, MSCI.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Can I pass those around?
Yes. Yes. And I would like to also point out you can actually open them up, and that's something you want to do because it says made in Germany on the outside, but if you look inside, it's made in Oregon, and it's one of the best kept secrets.
I like that better.
And yeah, I want to point out Biotronic, we're a world leader in the space for cardiac rhythm management. So these are pacemakers, defibrillators, and other products. We actually, as you can see, celebrate our 50th anniversary this year, but what I really want to point out that we're already 34 years in Oregon, right? And we kept a very low profile, very busy, kept our heads down. But we have grown quite a bit. We have 500 employees in Oregon together between sales, marketing, and R&D and manufacturing, and 900 in the U.S. And I want to point out what we actually do in Oregon because it's key, and it's quite unusual. I mean, obviously, what we have since, I'm from Germany original, and if you know these Germans, they typically like to keep their core operations in their home country, Germany. But we're quite different because we have a key operation, R&D and manufacturing in Oregon, 34 years and bigger than ever. And that really speaks for what we do here. We design and manufacture really the next generation products. And I want to talk a little about the manufacturing. I can talk about the design, we'll talk about manufacturing. manufacturing, because I think that's a key success story. So we are one of the few plants in the world, the only five plants in the world that do what we do, two in Europe, three in the U.S., two in Arizona, one is in Oregon. So we're quite proud of what we do, because we make the microelectronic circuits, we design the circuits for implantable devices, and that's a class by itself, because it's a regulated industry, high reliable, very sensitive, very critical, very small, requires a lot of technology, hardware, software, mechanical engineering. So we take advantage of a lot of the employees in Oregon, of the infrastructure training that we get. We hired people from HP, from Xerox, from other industry that we have to basically, if you like, convert or train to our needs. And our manufacturing, in fact, has become so competitive that we not only manufacture for Biotronic, we are also now putting in business for from other companies, in fact, three from California, who are now moving the manufacturing from California to Oregon. And now you might say it's left pocket, right pocket, if you look at it from the U.S. perspective, but I should mention the one case that would have gone to Ireland, and actually it, instead of going to Ireland, it goes to Oregon, which I think is a better place. Now, the rain might be the same, but I think it's a better place. So I think I wanted to kind of point out, if you think about bioscience, what's happening for 34 years and counting, and I can say that obviously our company made the decision a long time ago to go in Oregon, and I can also rest assured there are no plans to go anywhere, so I want to kind of keep everybody assured. And I want to explain why bioscience is so successful, because you need to have employees, you need to have a stable workforce, employees that know what they're doing, and that's really what we've been able to create here in Oregon, and that's what we obviously want to keep, but that's also something we want to grow. And I want to also talk about a little bit of competition. So on the one hand, yes, we're not going to go anywhere, so but I do have competition. I'm not talking about my international organization. I compete with Switzerland and with Bavaria. Now, Switzerland has twice as many employees as Oregon. Bavaria has three times. And as I think you all know, at least from Switzerland, that's a hot spot for bioscience. I think, you know, Oregon is one too, but I think nobody really knows about it. So that's, I think, also today's our message to recognize industry, which is here in Oregon, and I think also to make sure that that recognition goes beyond Oregon, because it will attract other companies as well. And to be very selfish here, it will also help me to grow my site.
So when you say you're competing against Bavaria and Switzerland, that's other divisions within your company?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So obviously, you know, when it comes to decisions where to put new products, you know, there is that friendly competition which you have in any family, right? And so I would, you know, appreciate when I talk about Oregon there, you know, that there are clear advantages besides the site. Why go to Oregon? Why not to Switzerland? Why not to Bavaria?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true for other companies.
So those are definitely things, if you talk about our industry, where I feel in Oregon we can and we should do more to recognize that industry.
Thank you.
Questions?
Any questions? Representative Betts? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you for being here today. When you say the Switzerland is a hot spot for this, why? What is it that attracts people there? What should we be
copying? Well, I mean, if we look at the medical device or pharmaceutical industry, you know, many of those are located in Switzerland. There is a lot of, you know, vibe, infrastructure, and recognition where it's the place to go. One of our competitors, in fact, moved the whole final assembly to Switzerland, from Minneapolis to Switzerland, for example. Again, taking advantage of the labor, of the workforce, of an infrastructure, of an established, you know, site there, that is part of the Switzerland. So you have infrastructure, you have again a general very positive climate that, you know, drives medical device industry, and those are all, you know, drivers. Switzerland is not cheap. That's for sure, right? It can't be the labor cost. That's not Switzerland, right? There are other drivers, soft factors that make Switzerland more very attractive in the world for medical or bioscience.
Sure. Thank you. So, if you were going to prioritize the attractive elements, what's at the top? Is it the fact that you have a big building that's available? Is it the fact that tax structure is really good? Is it the fact that you have a lot of really educated people anxious to go to work? Which is it?
I think it. And now, if you don't mind, I'm speaking here, somebody with a European perspective. I think, first of all, Oregon, coming from Europe, I think is a great state, right? I mean, it is has very European, very a lot of values which I think attract Europeans. So that's a big plus, right? I don't think you can say that about California or other states that easily. Then I think people who come here really, you know, like it. That it's easy for us to attract people. But beyond those it, you know, initial criteria is now if you look at the workforce, an excellent workforce, right? I mean, we're I mentioned HP, I mentioned Xerox, so we were able to, you know, the laid off people, we were able to, you know, hire those people as we are able with programs that the OBA is working on to get other employees in and have a very stable workforce. People here, people that work in Oregon, that live in Oregon, tend to stay, which is huge plus, mm-hmm. right? You don't have that transient, you know, workforce that you may have in other states. So lifestyle, attractive, a good environment from a labor standpoint, those are all big pluses if we look at our workforce.
Right, and we do this often with witnesses who enjoy the type of knowledge you obviously have, and we ask what we should fix, what's wrong with Oregon, what is it that we should do differently?
Well, I think there are a number of things, I guess, but I think one of this I already mentioned is I think a general recognition of the bioscience industry. That would be a first step to have more focus, because people who come here, other companies who look here should see that there is more of a hub in a bioscience hub in Oregon than it probably is visible today. And that's really the work of OBA. That's the work of us to make it more visible so they can attract other companies. Well, I think, of course, and I don't want to go get into the tax structure and all that, of course, there's always room for improvement, right? And I don't want to deny that, right? And there are other regulations, the red tape and all that, that obviously Oregon has, but I'm sure other states have this as well. I think there's room for improvement there as well. Yes.
Thank you.
But I really want to point out the strength of Oregon. I really point that out because that might be something underappreciated at times, right? A little bit the underdog, you know, somewhere, you know, perched between Washington and California. I think we in Oregon should realize what we got, not so much what we don't have. So I think that there is more to Oregon that might be visible.
Thanks. Representative Gorsuch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I see you're located in Lake Oswego. Are there other similar bioscience sorts of facilities around you? In other words, are you standalone by yourself, or are there other businesses that have been attracted to the area where you are?
Well, in what we do, we are relatively unique at this point in time. What we do, though, in Oregon is that we have suppliers, mm-hmm. for example, foundries. We're working with on semiconductor in Gresham. Mm-hmm. We're going to move a lot of that business to Gresham. We're working with a foundry in Bend. So we have critical suppliers that are also in Oregon now that we take advantage of.
Any possibility that you would move some facilities out next to ON in Gresham?
Well,
and that's my district, so I had to ask. Port of Portland has a lot of land there. I'm just saying.
But I want to say, and again, coming back to the stable workforce, because we actually were looking at the different facilities a few years ago, but we decided that we stay where we are, and this is because it's too disruptive to the workforce and to the operation. Mm-hmm. So I think once a company is established, I think there is, again, I'm talking about bioscience, I think it's a great, part of the strategy to stay, not to change it, because our products, design cycles and manufacturing cycles are long. So that's, I think, the beauty of bioscience. Once they're there, they tend to stay, okay. Right, which is a big plus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate that point about the supply chain and the ripple effects. And mm-hmm. Representative Gorsuch, you've sort of previewed, we have, as you see on your agenda, a number of other people from other companies who may have stories to tell about other parts of the state. You've also, as you've been listening, probably heard something of a preview of the kinds of questions we're likely to ask everyone who comes about what we should be paying attention to, what changes we might want to be considering, what we need to be doing as a legislature and as a committee. So as the rest of you come up, you might anticipate those questions. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that reminds me, I should have asked, when it comes to the amount of capital versus the person that's in your company, we like to see how much money you have to spend before you can bring one person in for a job. In other words, what's the proper phrase?
Capital intensive.
Is your operation hugely capital intensive?
Yes.
Do you have to have
yes.
millions and millions and millions of dollars to put one person to work?
Well, I wouldn't say it's millions of dollars, but it is very capital intensive. For example, we have a very automated manufacturing line. Otherwise, you couldn't manufacture in the Western world, right? So we feel very well, you know, set up to compete with the rest of the world, with the big markets, China, India, and wherever they are. So yes, we invest a lot. And yes, there you have to invest. But on the other hand, what I really want to point out is, and speaking of our companies, a lot of the investment is in the people and the know-how and the training. So we take, you know, I think we take a lot of advantage of the universities that we have in Oregon, which I think are excellent. We work on collaboration, expand the collaboration, and other training programs. And that, I think, would be a huge help again, to get employees and to get employees up to speed to work in our industry. So I think besides capital, it's also the effort, the investment into training, which is a big factor.
Right, this was actually, if I may, this is actually building on Vice Chair Gorsuch's question about moving a physical plant out to his area. So is that millions of dollars to establish? What I'm really getting at here is, what does it take to get you to grow bigger? Do we need to bring more people here? What is it? What's the missing magic that would make your business suddenly expand?
In our company, since we are very established right now, we're talking about strategy. It's almost like shifting the weight from the left to the right foot, right? So, and I mentioned the other, you know, sides. Obviously, you know, if we do well here, it comes to employment performance and all that, we get more business. And I can't complain if I, you know, talk about our company, because the commitment to Oregon is strong, and I think it also continues in a good path, because we have seen a constant growth in Oregon. So speaking from my experience, it has been good, and we've been able, but it's something you have to demonstrate year over year, to be successful and be competitive within the organization, right? And I come back to the, you know, very stable employment, very educated people, and I think that generally, you know, positive infrastructure that helps us to, you know, to educate the employees and get good employees. As I mentioned, we've hired, you know, key people from Hewlett-Packard, Xerox, Intel, other companies, and we're able to get into a lot of high-tech people that happen to be in this area, and they see a future in bioscience rather than the industry that they worked in before. So that's I think, is one of the strategic advantages we have as our company, and that helps us to grow.
Thank you.
Yes? Just as an aside, I think we need to differentiate between the cost of bringing in a new company or the opportunity cost. Once these facilities are inspected by the FDA, the cost Juergen's referring to is being down, having to be reinspected when you move your facility somewhere else. And so that's different kinds of costs. But the message is clear. If you can get a bioscience company to build manufacturing facilities, it is very difficult for them to then relocate either outside the state or, unfortunately, even within the state. The idea is to be able to get them to anchor down with some manufacturing facilities.
Yeah.
Representative Doherty.
You referred to like the ready workforce and so on. Is there enough infrastructure in the university system to deal with some of the sciences and so on that you guys need in the
training? I would say yes and no. There clearly is from the basic science, and we hire people from all disciplines, mm-hmm. right? So I think that is good. However, now we're talking about the specific needs, and we're making products for life-supporting applications mm-hmm. in a regulated industry, so there's a lot of know-how and knowledge that we have to add as a company, and that's where programs that we develop with the OBA are really instrumental. Mm-hmm. This could be for new employees. This could be for people who just come, you know, out of school, or it could be even for employees who have been with us for a long time, where we want to make sure we freshen up the knowledge about.
And so you
the
have
leads.
Your own training programs,
yes,
too.
Yes, because okay. some of that is bioscience specific, so it really complements what's done in the universities, mm-hmm. right? And we do work together with universities, and we do reach out, and some programs are being shaped, but there's training that we as an organization have to provide, and that is a very good investment. I think that's a very good, you know, help that we have as an industry to make sure we get employees more up to speed. And that also allows us to hire people from completely different areas. So there is a good path for people to bridge from other industries into bioscience, you know, providing this transfer and this bridge.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Next, we'll have Brian Dunlap join us, and he can discuss Galena Biopharma.
Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for your time today. Appreciate it. My name is Ryan Dunlap. I'm the CFO of Galena Biopharma. You'll find we're a lot different than my previous colleague in that we're a very small company with no capital intensity whatsoever. My background is I've been there about a year. Prior to that, I worked at KPMG and Moss Adams in public accounting, focused on technology and life science industry. So I've seen quite a bit of a cross-section in Oregon of the various types of companies that you see in these industries, and got a feel for some of their challenges and struggles, particularly in the capital raising front. Just to give you a little background about Galena, we actually started as a company called RXI Pharmaceuticals. We were in Boston, so one of the more recognized hotbeds, obviously, of the biotech industry here in the U.S. And we had we focused on RNA technologies, and without getting into too much of the science, it was dermal scarring and other related technologies. In early 2011, we decided to change directions. We bought a company called Apthera, and we bought a technology called Nuvax, which is a cancer immunotherapy. Yeah. I'm giving you a little background, and it'll make sense why as I progress. Also with that acquisition, my boss, the CEO of our company, was the chair of the board at the time, or he was on the board at the time, sorry. They asked him to go ahead and take over as CEO and get back into the operations. He agreed to do that, but he agreed to do that only if the company moved to Oregon. And one of the it is a little bit of a reverse commute, you know, to some degree. But I think I'll resound something that Jürgen said, is that it is a very attractive place from a lifestyle standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, for a lot of the folks who you find as in the executives in tech and life science space. So that was really the key driver that got us out here. We changed our name to Galena Biopharma, and we moved here in the fall of 2011. And since then, we began the process of developing the breadth, depth, and pace of our pipeline, and we spun off the RNAi technology, and now we're solely focused on cancer, and it's developing and commercializing innovative cancer care, improving the standard care for cancer patients. When we moved out here, we were 8 employees strong. 4 of them were here in Oregon. Now we're up to 17 employees in Oregon and 24 strong, so we've been growing. When we got here, our market cap was $24 million, and it's grown as high as $250 million in recent weeks. It's down to $175 million today, I guess, depending on which day you look at it. But we are publicly traded on the NASDAQ, so we do have one advantage in that regard, and that is that we do have access to New York money. In other words, we have access to funds because we're a publicly traded company. It's a lot easier for us to access capital than it might be for a private company. We also didn't get our technology. It wasn't homegrown in Oregon. Our technology comes from MD Anderson in Texas. So it was easy for us to move up here because we don't have capital. We just have office spaces. Everything's on the cloud. We don't even have a server. So it was just simply a matter of moving out here. Part of the challenge is, though, it can be very difficult to get some of the folks in regulatory and clinical and some of the scientific folks in oncology to relocate. And even to this day, I'll mention we just bought another drug in advancing our pipeline. It's a pain medication called Abstral. It's designed for breakthrough cancer pain, and it's actually already approved by the FDA. So we're going to kick off our commercial operations this year. We hope to expand to 50 by the end of the year from a headcount standpoint, with 24 of those folks in Portland. Average wage of the folks we hire is about $150,000 a year. So we're happy with the expansion. With Abstral, obviously, we had to bring on some more folks, and so we did manage to get some folks to move from Seattle and the Bay Area, but it can be a little bit of a challenge in this industry to find the right human resources to support the clinical operations and the scientific operations. So from a challenge standpoint, I think that's one of the key ones. We also do, like I mentioned, we have the advantage of having access to public money, and I think some other companies don't have that same. You know, there are a lot of private companies who may, you know, and I think that's the other challenge in Oregon is VCs and other investors like to be close to their investments, and you know, most of those folks are located in the Bay Area or in Boston or in LA. So I think that's also one of the challenges that face companies like ours, but perhaps that aren't publicly traded and don't have the same access to the public money that we have. But it is possible for them to move out here. And again, with the virtual, you know, the virtual information that we have these days, it's very easy to relocate to Oregon. Even if you get your IP somewhere else, and even if you have to get your money somewhere else.
Okay, questions. I had two. One is, you talked about how some of the things that brought you here as a company, are those the same things that will keep you here? As much as I was excited about you coming here, your description of how easy that was makes me a little fearful that would be easy for someone to steal you away, too.
Right, that's a very good point, and actually Texas did try to do that. They were unsuccessful because it's home to us. And that is largely driven by the lifestyle. But I do think that there are some things that could be done that would be more encouraging for companies that, I guess, may not be, in tune to what a great lifestyle we have here. I think, the lifestyle incentive only goes so far. For us, it worked, but I don't necessarily think that that's a sustainable, by itself, a sustainable reason that companies would stay and be retained here, or move here and then be retained here.
So what are those things that you think we should be doing?
I would say, I mentioned access to capital, and a lot of companies struggle with the ability to raise money if they're here, and that's what causes a lot of companies to move out. I think that there are ways that we could design some tax incentives. There are some states that, for instance, I know that Oregon does have net operating loss carrybacks and carryforwards. We have research and development credits. I think there are somewhere between 9 and 12 states that also allow refundable or transferable R&D credits and NOL credits. And I think that would allow folks, because companies like ours, we don't make any money, we just spend money for the first several years of our lifespan. You build up all these NOL credits and R&D credits that perhaps will expire and never get used. I think perhaps, as an example, something that could be done to help companies fund, help companies go buy technology like Abstral that then allows them to go commercial and grow, would be to create other ways for them to generate capital to help not only hire employees, but help progress their technologies and their pipelines without having to move to San Francisco next to a VC.
Thank you. Representative Betts.
Thank you, Chair. It's always great having the controller of the company here. A number of us serve on the Revenue Committee, so the issues about tax are hugely interesting to us. Mm-hmm. One that I've heard many times is that Oregon's high income tax of 10% on folks that earn almost anything here works to our disadvantage, but that would only be in comparison to taxes that don't have a high income tax. California, pretty high. I don't know what Texas is, but when we look at the states that you would be likely to be tempted to move to, does that come into play, the amount of the income tax? The way it's been explained to me is that we have a hard time attracting people who are paid between $100,000 and $400,000, let's say. They don't want to come here because of that additional tax. And when we look at what the federal government's doing, raising the income tax for a married couple to the big $400,000, let's say, in total, that their tax is going to be around 39% at the federal level. And so that's here, that's upon us.
Yeah.
Plus another and another and another. It actually gets really close to 45%, as
yeah.
you well know. So my question is Oregon at a disadvantage by virtue of its high income tax when it comes to attracting people to work in the kind of business you work for?
To be honest, I think it is. And I think another reason for that is because in companies like ours, a lot of the compensation is stock-based. And so it's not just all on your salary and, you know, taxed on an annual basis. You're accumulating equity that at one point, that becomes wealth. And at the point when that becomes wealth, you know, I think that becomes a severe disadvantage. I actually heard a few of my colleagues say, well, it's time to move to Vancouver before your stock options vest. Because when they do vest, you're going to lose a lot of money by paying the higher state income tax.
And Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
All the more reason for a new bridge with a toll on it. So, in all seriousness, what is the what are the other states that would be more competitive than we as Texas? I don't know what Texas is.
You know, I'll be honest. I don't really know the answer to that either.
Thank you.
It is an interesting area to talk about, particularly the capital gains and those sorts of wealth creation events. We've had conversations about that. Other questions? One more I had that might go to either one of you. You mentioned, Mr. Dunlap, that the idea, your experience in acquiring a technology from Texas and bringing it here, is that a common thing? I mean, the popular story, at least that's in my own mind, is the idea of acquiring the technology in place and staying there. And so, on the one hand, I'm sure most of us would agree here that it's an attractive idea to be boosting the intellectual capacity and the horsepower in our institutions of higher education, so we're creating more throughput in that regard. But on the other hand, the idea of acquiring things from elsewhere and using our quality of life supplemented by tax structure and other things, that's an interesting strategy too. Have you any thoughts on that in a general sense?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think both. Mm-hmm. You would probably want to promote.
Probably they're not mutually exclusive.
Because we do have very, very good research institutions here, and I think it's probably the tech transfer in Oregon is probably one of the most underutilized tech transfers that at least I'm familiar with. I won't start speaking to the reasons for that. I'm not quite sure what they are, but I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that when they do spin off a promising technology and the investing community identifies it as a promising technology, most of those folks try to bring it out of state.
My answer would be slightly different, which is that in a portfolio situation, you need some of, you know, both, and we are very underrepresented. Their story allowed them to come here and from roughly a cold start, become a $25 and then $177 million company. Now, if we followed the whole path of that technology that they licensed, there would have been a long extended period of proving out that technology in Texas. That's the expensive part of the curve, and I think you have to invest in that part of the curve, but not to the exclusion of the other part. And because we're not out there competing with other states, we're very vulnerable to states like Texas catching our best technologies as it comes out of tech transfer and then relocating them at a time when they're most apt to generate jobs and income and revenue. So I have the same philosophy about recruiting companies as I have about STEM technology or STEM education. It's great to have STEM at the earliest stages, but you need STEM at the midlife career-changing opportunities for tax-paying Oregonians to move, as Jürgen said, from one industry into our industry. Not to already promote an earmark that I'm hoping that the legislature votes on later in the session, but I think we are vastly underrepresented in this particular situation where we take money and expertise and technology and bring it all here to make a company out of it when the advantages of Oregon are probably strongest. And wait for the Knight Cardiovascular Institute, the Knight Cancer Institute, other major research institutions to develop research in areas that are our core competency.
That's helpful. And there's nothing wrong with you talking about specific legislation. Maybe at the end as a wrap-up comment.
Don't lose the opportunity to ask him what Texas offered, roughly. I mean, he may not be able to tell you exactly, but I think for you to really level set the competition, I mean, I know
they were
going to.
What did Texas offer you?
But yeah, thank you for asking. they were going to give us a $10 million grant to move our facilities out there. And the fact of the matter is, it was an application process, and we didn't win. But this was before my time as well, so I'm speaking from what I've learned through history. But yeah, it was a subject of conversation with my boss going, gosh, I don't want to move, but they sure are making it attractive to do so.
Yeah. $10 million non-dilutive fund, that was not for equity, that was come to Texas.
Yeah. Got it. $10 million is a big number around here these days when we're into the last bits of the budget.
It sure is.
Thank you for that. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Next, Jones, will be Andrew Borofsky, again representing yet a different sector in the bioscience industry.
Chairman, Vice Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I really appreciate being here to tell the RevMedic story. We are a small startup medical device company. We were founded in about 2009. We currently have 9 employees located in Wilsonville. We were founded on a mission to develop products to stop lethal hemorrhaging out on the battlefield. To date, we've been largely, if not almost completely, funded by the U.S. military, money coming from both Special Operations Command and the United States Army. I brought a couple of sample products just to give you a flavor of the types of technologies that we're developing. This might be good to...
Do I have to have a knife wound to demo?
No, I'm not going to do any live demos with this stuff today. Dennis, can I hit this thing? Oops, that one's gone.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, we'll jump to... I'm sorry. I meant to bring up your slideshow.
Yeah,
today.
Well, I think a little bit of... So I'll get on it. That device right there is called the X-STAT wound dressing, and it was designed to stop a particularly important type of lethal bleeding on the battlefield called non-compressible hemorrhage. This is a situation where a soldier receives an injury that cannot be treated with a traditional gauze-like bandage, and it can't be treated with a tourniquet. It's usually an injury that occurs in the torso region, so imagine getting a bullet or a piece of shrapnel in your shoulder region or in your femoral region around your waist. When that occurs, well, the most famous example of this, frankly, took place in the Black Hawk Down mission, and this actually was the there was a ranger that was in that mission who received a bullet wound to his femoral artery, and despite the heroic efforts of his fellow team members, did not survive that injury. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Army took it upon itself to start funding and start looking for solutions to that type of bleeding. We are sort of on the tail end of it. Several other efforts had been underway for a number of years to sort of solve the problem to no avail. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we took a pilot grant from the Special Operations to develop the technology. And this is the solution that we came up with. So what's in that device you see is about 100 small compressed sponges. And what happens is those sponges, when they get placed in a wound, they come into contact with blood and they rapidly expand. They fill up the wound and they compress the interior of that wound, and they actually stop the bleeding that way. Extremely highly effective. This has been sort of on a rapid track once the technology is developed, and I'm proud to say it was essentially developed here in Oregon, and it's been tested in Oregon for the last 4 years, so this is really an Oregon technology. And so for about the last 3 or 4 years, we've been working diligently to take this from a laboratory-based medical device to an actual product that can be fielded on the battlefield. Right now, it's currently under FDA review. We're expecting to launch this product in 2013. We're about in the midst of a de novo petition with the FDA, and I'm very hopeful that within the next couple months, we can receive an approval on this and move into the manufacturing and commercialization stage of developing this product. In addition to this, so one of the good things that's come out of this as well is because of all this R&D funding and because of the team that we've been able to put together here in Wilsonville, and we've got 9 employees. I can tell you that 8 of them are all have technical backgrounds, including myself. So we really are engineers and clinicians developing these products. What's blossomed out of this is an additional 8 products that we're now developing that we're going to be all in the field of hemorrhage control out on the battlefield that we hope to bring to the market here certainly within the next year to 2 years. I brought another one of these just to show you a little bit of the type of innovation that's happening. This is called a shark bite dressing. This is for another ghastly wound that takes place on the battlefield. It is where, frankly, a large, large chunk of tissue has been removed. Imagine stepping on an IED. And basically what this is, this dressing is filled with the same sponges that you see in that X-STAT device. There's about 300 of them in here. So what happens is when blood comes into contact with this dressing expands about 10 to 15 times. So it fills up a wound, it applies pressure, it allows the rapid treatment and evacuation of soldiers on the battlefield. And I will say that all these products are, we certainly, as part of our business strategy, plan to transition these into the commercial and civilian markets as well. So speaking a little bit about our experience here in Oregon, I'm a native Oregonian. I was raised here, educated here, I think the reason that RevMedics is in Oregon is a large degree has to do with myself and my partner, Dr. Ken Gregory, are native Oregonians. We love it here. This is home. And since we are in control of the technology and the destiny of this particular venture, we certainly wanted to build it and grow it here. But I will say it's also, but that's not a bad thing at all. In fact, it's a very good thing. I will echo some of some of our prior speakers in that Oregon's got a lot of great resources and a lot of great things which can help build a technology company. This slide is sort of just a collage of the different local partners that we use that have been had a hand in developing this product for us. We do work with Oregon Health Sciences University. We do work with Legacy Health System, who's got a great R&D group up in Portland. Zeba Industrial Design was largely responsible for designing that applicator. DesignPort is a company that's located in our same building that does great engineering work. Of course, we use local law firms. Vision Plastics, around the corner from us in Wilsonville, is going to be molding that device and building it for us. So we're really tapping into, we love buying local. And we're not talking about a farmer's market. I mean, we love the fact that
although
that's the first...
Too, right?
That too, but I mean, the first thing we look for is
the farmers market starts tomorrow
for this, because you cannot beat face-to-face collaboration. You cannot beat going down the street and talking to an engineer or a supplier or somebody and shaking their hand and doing a deal and looking at devices and figuring out what you need to do and getting from point A to point B with it. And there's a lot of great resources here and service providers that can enhance the ability for a medical device startup like ourselves to grow and succeed. That's all I'd say about that, I think. So just in talking about some of the challenges that we face, I think that I highlighted education. First of all, it starts with people. People are what make these companies go. People are what develop this technology. People are what commercialize this technology, get it out into the marketplace, sell it, etc. And so I can't overemphasize that. It's really all about the people. And to that end, for a technical company like ourselves, education is key. And again, I've got a technical background. I got a biochemistry degree from University of Oregon. I've got, not to shine the light on myself, but my father was a founding faculty member of the Oregon Graduate Institute and also is then moved on to Oregon State University. So I've been around science and engineering in this state for a long time. I've sort of grown up with it. And I can't overemphasize anything you can do to promote education. And it goes beyond, I think it starts both with, you know, primary education, getting kids excited about science and engineering. Is great, but also I think really having world-class university institutions near us is key. I think it can be key for purposes of both originating technology, but for a company that's starting to mature like ourselves, again, if I can go down and interact with and interface with engineers down at the OSU School of Engineering, you never know what comes out of that. It can be enhancement to my product, it can be solving a problem I have, and it can be a whole new idea, like, oh my gosh, you guys should be developing this, or we have this technology. And so making sure that we have world-class universities here is creates a culture of innovation and an incredibly symbiotic relationship with a company that is willing to sort of reach out and collaborate with those institutions. We live on collaboration, we need to do it, we're so small. It's a necessity for what we want to accomplish. I think sort of building on that general concept, again, we need a lot of technical consultants and a lot of technical services around us, everything from regulatory consultants to laboratory testing services to engineering facilities, et cetera, et cetera. And to the extent that this state has a good crop of those, that's going to help us succeed. And I think that starts with the education. I mean, if people have job opportunities to join those types of organizations here in the state, that means, you know, that's going to be here. And that's very important for a company like us. Funding, always. You can't have enough money to build and grow these things. It's a constant necessity. We've been very fortunate. Our whole strategy as a company is generally to identify an unmet need and then build a product to meet that need and succeed at that. We've done that with the XDAT dressing and the shark bite. The shark bite dressing is also funded by Special Operations Command. So we are building and delivering products to the U.S. military that they need. And so we've got kind of a pull there. And because of that, we've been very fortunate to receive the amount of funding that we've had from the federal government. But that won't always be there for us. As we grow and move towards commercialization, We also need to tap additional types of fundings to sort of help those next phases of the growth of the company. So access to capital, you know, whether it be seed capital, it also has to do with banking, et cetera, et cetera. Just having the ability to get money into the company to fund the types of programs that we need to do to develop these products is a constant challenge for us. And the last thing I'll say is just an overall, I think anything that the state can do, I focused on the education piece to really, in my opinion, and I think it's sort of a broad concept, but I'll just raise it here, to create a culture of innovation and entrepreneurship is really what, you know, bringing in folks that have the right technical background, have the entrepreneurial spirit, and surrounding them with the right types of services and infrastructure is in my opinion, ultimately, when we've accomplished that to the degree that it's happened in places like Boston and San Francisco and Texas and all these other places we've talked about, really good things are going to happen to the extent that they're not already happening. So thank you for your time. Happy to answer any questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Questions? I wonder if you could talk about, it's really great to have someone who has been here sort of all along through the history of the company. Are there any, as you look back, any particular turning points that you could point to that where the state did or didn't play a role, should have, was key to getting you to the next level?
In terms of the company or?
Yes.
You know, that's a great question. I'd say that's difficult to point a finger at. I think that we represent a little bit of one of those circumstances where stars aligned, both in terms of, I mean, I've got a really, really great team of people. And I will say this, I haven't yet recruited anybody. I've recruited one person from outside the state. That was a former 18 Delta combat medic out of Special Forces who was our program manager, okay, for this project while he was for the first 3 years of it. And we were successfully recruited him out to Oregon after he retired from 25 years of military service. Other than that, we've really tapped local talent. And I've got people that graduates from University of Portland, Oregon State University, et cetera, sort of on my team. Talking about sort of the symbiotic and the infrastructure, in fact, my director of manufacturing was a former team member of Juergen's over at Biotronic. And frankly, that was one of the hardest positions for me to recruit. I was really getting to the point where I needed to recruit somebody out of the state, and fortunately I found a really high-quality person amongst us, thanks to a large part to Biotronic.
Glad you're still friends. That's
but yeah, so but the you know frankly, it's a little bit of a luck that we sort of landed here, I guess, from the state's perspective. But I think, you know, now that we're here and we're growing this here, it really is all about the stickiness of it. Our goal is to actually manufacture this in Wilsonville, so we're setting up manufacturing to do so. That's the next phase of our company's development. I think things will get a whole lot stickier then, as Dennis has indicated. Once we build that manufacturing facility, it is an FDA-regulated facility, etc., it becomes challenging to sort of move that.
Music to Representative Davis's ears.
Yes, so it's good stuff, and that's what we intend to do. But, you know, frankly, for some of the other products we're looking at contract manufacturing. And again, we're looking at buying local, but in some circumstances, that's not always going to happen. But we're certainly not going to be a virtual company. You know, we've really kind of had our heads down with the mission, which is develop a product for the U.S. military, and we're pretty proud of that. But, you know, we've been very focused on that, and it just happens to be happening in Oregon.
That's great. We'll go for that. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for being here. Very interesting. One of the things that we've discussed over the years I've been on this committee is that the space between a recognition of the idea and then making the business, your company, happen. And you're mentioning, when you go down to talk to engineers and others, and people have good ideas, whether they're good ideas for a product that you have or brand new ideas that you might use to generate your company's next product, what I'm interested in knowing is this reminds me of a conversation. I'm gonna leave the question for a moment. It reminds me of a conversation I had with some folks down around OSU, and they were identical to what you're saying, and they were talking about the almost fertile ground around that university for all kinds of ideas, just ideas every time you turned around.
Right.
And the question was, what is stopping us from just exploding into all kinds of businesses pursuing those ideas? What is it? Is it the lack of people like you that have the gumption to put a business together and try to make it happen? Is it the lack of demand? What is it that prevents just this state taking off like a rocket with all those great ideas? Is it the lack of great ideas? I just want to know where on that continuum we should focus our attention.
Yeah, it's a really loaded question. First of all, my first reaction is ideas are not products. Okay, and I think you have to sort of keep that in mind. As clever as an idea may be, does it fulfill an unmet need in the marketplace? Is there going to be a perception of value by some consumer of that product at some point? And there is a long path between that idea inception to a commercialized product. I mean, I'm in the midst of living that, and I can tell you, it's been challenging, and I've had absolutely identified unmet need and developed a product that frankly fills that hole pretty well. And I've got a built-in customer. I literally have folks in the military that are just waiting for us to clear so they can purchase this product. And despite all that, we invented in 2009. It's taken us sort of 4 years to get here because there's just a lot of things that need to sort of fall into place. But in terms of having a lot of great ideas, I really think it's connecting the dot to an idea in some way you can turn it into a product fully realized that somebody wants to buy. And to me, it's about inventing somebody. It's kind of the push-pull thing. You can have a really clever idea and say, this is such a clever idea, I got this new gear. And you can try to, at that point, advertise it to the world and try to get somebody to sell it. Or you can turn around and say, somebody's got a problem over here that they need a solution for. I'm going to develop that solution, and if he uses this gear or not, it really doesn't matter. The point is develop that solution and create that product. And I think that is something that, I've seen a lot of companies with really good ideas that they even have an idea of what a great product is. But the reality of it is, for a whole host of reasons, that, you know, whether it be, you know, how is, you know, it's too expensive or it's disruptive in a way that they're not taking account of all the different market forces that would sort of preclude the adoption of that product. So that's my immediate answer to that, is that you have to, I mean, one thing that, and this is really stemming from one of our missions or one of the hallmarks, I believe, of our company is that we are extremely focused on user-based design. All we do is focus on the user. We keep asking our end users, our the folks that are going to go out on the battlefield and use these products, over and over again, hey, we made this change. Is it good? Is it bad? Where are we going with this? Do you still want this? Is it light enough? Is it cheap enough? And you ask that over and over and over again. So eventually your product, because it wants to do this, keeps focused on the mark and it gets there. And maybe that's ultimately the answer to your question, is that there's so many things that force you to go like this as you travel down that path towards commercialization. It's really hard to keep on that target.
Reminds me very much of an economics professor I had in business school who answered nearly every question with some version of what you just said and saying, satisfy the pain, find the need and satisfy that. That's what Paul said. Do you have a follow-up? I missed most of the question.
Well, yes, a short one. What we're trying to, that was a very good answer. I just want to identify where in that continuum we should focus our attention to try to promote more activities such as the ones your panel is explaining to us today. And it appears that it's not so much the idea as it is the execution of moving from recognition of the need, the pain, whatever it is, and then following it out. And that, to fill that gap is, we've talked about education, and we talked about workforce, and we've talked about capital, and so we can talk about more of those things that fit in that space.
Well, the shorter answer is people. Okay? For example, when you talk about the education piece, easy to say, pour more money into education on some level. That may be true, but to me, it's when I talk about sort of creating a world-class, the way I see it sort of panning out is this, is that you want to make Oregon State or UVO or PSU or OHSU a world-class institution to the point at which the highest quality faculty members want to come there. You want to make sure that those institutions have the funding to hire faculty members at competitive rates, use everything that they can in terms of the quality of life out here, and bring somebody out that is really smart, hungry, entrepreneurial, et cetera, et cetera. And whether that be a science professor or an engineering professor or an engineering graduate student, et cetera, et cetera. It's attracting people that have the skill set, the gumption, the it factor for doing what a lot of these companies, you know, are doing. Guys like Bernie Fox back here that can, you know, really pull it all together and do all the crazy things that an entrepreneur in a company like ours has to do. So that's the way that I can sort of see it. That's the way I see it happening, and that's why I sort of ended with this. It's creating a culture. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a culture from the state's perspective. I was trying to sort out, well, you know, what can the state do? What are some of the levers you guys can actually pull on? And I think education is one of those key ones. And I also speak to this, I guess, a little bit from having seen my dad's career play out as being a professor at Oregon State University. And, you know, it was a constant challenge for him to bring in the top, highest quality graduate students into his program at times. But he overcame that, you know, and had a great career, but nonetheless. But it starts off with making sure that we really nurture what we have here, and we've got some great institutions, and make sure that we feed them with really top quality Oregon high school graduates, you know? That's how I think it starts. It's a bit of a long vision thing. It's not going to solve anything tomorrow, but in the next 20, 30 years, there'll be a whole lot more rev medics out there. If we do that,
thank you.
And now to hear from your state representative, Representative Davis.
Wow, quite the introduction.
Wow, an introduction.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for taking your time out of your business to be here today. We've talked a lot, I think, about creating that fertile ground to get companies to where you are. Looking at your products and your story, it sounds like you're really at a turning point where this thing could explode over the next
few years.
So other than sort of the market and trying to do that part, you know, what are the challenges, opportunities, what scares you at night as you're going to bed about the next couple of years being in this state and how we can help make that a smooth transition? Because one of the things is not just growing small companies here, but making sure companies can get sticky, can get bigger, can grow here.
Again, I'll focus on the people. Talent recruitment, no question. That's why some of the training programs that the OBA offers in terms of either, you know, making sure that people in the community maintain a skill set or garner a skill set which allows them to work in the medical device industry is key. That one keeps me up at night. I think as we grow, you know, finding all the you know, talented people to fill the types of positions that we need to fill is going to be challenging. I, like I said, I bumped into that with a manufacturing position. And the reality is these people exist in our community. It's just that if I went down to, you know, if I go to a place like Switzerland and I want to find a director of manufacturing or a quality director, okay, I got a pretty big pool to choose from. I can get picky.
Yeah.
You know, I can go and get 20 resumes of really highly qualified people and find the best match. Here, I'm lucky if I can get three high-quality people that I can choose from, and then you hope that the match is there in terms of the team and the personality and everything else. So, you know, that's one where, you know, I'm concerned. And then also just making sure that all the different sort of workforce positions that we need have the available training. You know, I'm very thankful that the OBA's program, training program exists for that. So, and then the funding piece.
Yeah,
there's no question that the funding piece, cash flow, is always a concern.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
I was just going to say, okay. Since we have two more, and I know it's a sunny day, and the are closed.
Yeah. Thank you for that. We do have two questions here. I want to make sure we get a chance.
Well, I think one is more of a comment, because I look at what the kind of product
Dory,
that you have.
Pardon? I was going to ask Representative Gorsuch,
who's
in the queue first, and then we'll come to you. Thank you.
Just really quickly, the application for your product to first responders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that you've been focusing on the military.
Sure.
And that should be a huge market if once this goes through. But is it easy to transition to delivering for first responders, or because it's, is there a conflict with military contracts, or how quickly would that spill over to first responders?
Well, I mean, as quickly as it's available, okay. You know, it's in part a question of sort of our own marketing activities, and frankly, Adrian can from Sam Medical could probably speak a lot to this about that transition. Mm-hmm. He's got more experience in it. It's not as simple as it may appear, and again, I think this has to do with the user-focused design. Our mission in life has been to save soldiers' lives.
Right.
Ergo, we've designed this thing to be used on the battlefield. Now, whether somebody from Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, you know, the type of injury this is designed to treat, you know, thankfully doesn't happen in Oregon too often.
Right.
Okay. But we have, with an adaptation to the product, and there's some follow-on products that I think will be very useful for the type of trauma that we see here in our state. So, in the consumer markets. And so, but generally speaking, the minute our product is can legally be marketed in the United States as a medical device, if somebody from a EMS community wants to purchase our product, they're certainly more than welcome to do so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Doherty, thanks for your
patience. And the one thing I was thinking of, again, going on the education focus, because that's what my background is the respect that I have for entrepreneurs and people, because you're not thinking about a product 5 years down the road. You're thinking about a product 10 years down the road. And whether that product is still going to be needed after you come up with conception and you know the development of the product. And so what I've seen, and I don't know if this is something in business because I'm not a business background, but it's not only engineers, but a lot of the people now, I think, in education, you're looking at people that are not just engineers, but maybe liberal arts people who have that kind of creativity to kind of come up with a product. But I hope that that's also part of people's business plan to be able to think 10 years down the road and saying, what kind of product do we need? And I would find that very, very challenging for you guys to figure, okay, this is a product. It's taking us 6 years to do it. Are we going to be needing it in seven?
I'll tee off of your comment on education, too. I think, you know, the multidisciplinary mm-hmm. aspect of what we do in terms of I need engineers that have a good business sense. Okay, I need business people that have a good engineering sense
mm-hmm.
For a startup like mine. And so, again, on the education side, that sort of cross-pollination in both the educational experience and types of programs that the state offers to students is, I think, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And to get people excited, I mean, I've got a science background. I also have a law degree and an MBA. Okay, so, I live that cross-disciplinary piece. Mm-hmm. But whenever I talk to high school students or something, I'm a big promoter of the science piece or the engineering piece because I think you can do anything with that, and especially in this economy. I mean, you have somebody with a technical background that wants to go work for Apple in industrial design or something like that. It's putting it all together. So, and it's exciting. Mm-hmm. It's totally exciting. It's totally interesting. It's totally fulfilling career path. But that sort of cross-disciplinary nature of what all the different sort of talents you need, it's important and, again, should be, you know, something that we can excite kids with in terms of education path.
And something really push in the high schools, realizing you just don't major in one thing. You major in two or three.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Can you continue the conversation?
Joining us now is Adrian Poliak from SAM Medical. It has a deep and rich history in the state of Oregon, and as Andrew has said, has lived a lot of these cycles.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Thank you to the chair, vice chair, and the committee members for allowing me to speak in front of you. So thanks so much.
He's also chair of the Oregon Bioscience Association, so he's in effect my boss.
We'll be nice.
It's the only reason he treats me well. what these gentlemen have spoken about before me, I can only add to because it all is in agreement with me. I'll just quickly explain about SAM Medical, and then I'll get into some of the topics that resonate more with Oregon Bio as an industry. SAM Medical is a 28-year-old company. It was actually founded in Oregon, and we remain here in Oregon. About 4 years ago, we moved to Wilsonville, essentially amalgamating our production and our headquarters into one location, and that's worked out very successfully. We have had a close relationship with Clackamas County, which is the main reason we moved to Wilsonville. What SAM Medical does is we design and manufacture products for the trauma market. So our products get sold into EMS, into emergency departments, and into the military and law enforcement spaces, and that's around the world. So our products are essentially across various product categories, from fracture management to severe bleeding, like Andrew mentioned with his company, to wound care management for injuries to the chest, and also for non-trauma areas such as pressure ulcer, bed sore prevention and treatment. So that's the array of products that we produce. Effectively, 50% of our products are sold overseas. 3 years ago, that was 18%. So we have tremendously grown our international penetration, and that continues to be the case. The opportunities are immense, and the state, in fact, Business Oregon has been tremendously helpful in some of the STEP grants that we've taken advantage of over the past few years. So there's a real tangible benefits we've got from you guys. I guess when you look at the workforce needs that we have, which I would say are probably the number one issue, they are around obtaining talent, good top talent that we must need, we must obtain in order to move us forward. In early January, received a minority stake investment by the Grand Ronde Tribe. So we had an Oregon entity invest in SAM Medical. And one of the main missions for that investment is to grow the business 3 to 4-fold over the next 5 years. And one of the key ways of doing that is to get the right people on board before actually undertaking business development, sales, marketing, and new product development activities. There's no doubt that we struggle on that front. We have 4 openings right now, one for a business development manager, which we actually just filled yesterday, one for a product manager, another for a international sales assistant, because we're growing so rapidly in that arena, and one for an R&D engineer. When we have these openings, it's painful. It's great. It's wonderful to have the opportunity to hire, but like Andrew said, we're not sitting in Southern California or Boston or Minneapolis, where the pool, or Switzerland, if you will, where the pool is not as rich, is richer and not as rich here. So it's a challenge for us, and we spend a tremendous amount of time on talent finding, because we want to make sure that individual fits our culture, fits the values, and we do not want to hire on for a short-term opportunity. So a 28-year-old company, we have a long-term range to the marketplace. We are not going to make decisions that are short-term. We are certainly not averse to risk. We like risk. But at the same time, we want employees to be here in Oregon for a long time and see us as a career-building company. Another issue we face is that those folks we have hired over the past 5 years have generally come from the high-tech sector. So even if it's a marketing position, they might have come from Xerox or from Vestas. Some folks in regulatory or in manufacturing have come from Tektronix, Maxtech, and so forth. And the issue there is that they're coming with no medical background. And when I say medical background, I don't mean clinically. I just mean in terms of the medical device arena. They don't understand regulatory aspects with our industry. They don't understand the product development uniqueness about it that you might not experience elsewhere. And just the industry as a whole. So what Oregon Bio has managed to do over the past 5 years with BioPro is allow some of those, you know, green individuals who have otherwise tremendous skills in their respective areas, gain in short time with short courses a number of skills, elementary skills nevertheless, but skills that can be done right here in Oregon, generally in Portland, without having to be sent out of state and so forth. So prior to Oregon, prior to BioPro, we would send some of our QC techs and our regulatory manager to California for courses, introductory courses. You're taking them away from the work for a week, even if it's for a 3-day course, it's travel and so forth. Now we can do that here in state. That's a real tangible, easy opportunity for us to take advantage of, and many companies do. But at the same time,
if there's a way to create more of a mid-level, high-level training for transitional workers, which we are calling applied STEM, if you will. So you're not dealing with this 5 or 10 or 20-year plan, but you're dealing with literally a plan this year that can help us now. That would allow companies like ourselves, and I'm sure folks behind me, bring on folks from Tektronix, from Intel, and other areas who are interested in getting into the medical device, biotech, bio sector, if you will, at large. I mean, our industry is exceptionally attractive. I mean, dealing with products and technologies that generally save lives or mitigate pain. So on that altruistic level, it's very rewarding. Secondly, dealing with a sector that's growing, where the median wage is much, much higher than in that sector than most sectors. So very, very well-paying positions. And thirdly, technologies that have a life cycle that's much, much longer than most industries. I mean, our flagship product, the SAM Splint, was invented in 76, brought to market in 85, and is still on the market today as the market leader around the world as a flexible splint used in the field. We have had, and the patents expired, and we have knockoffs, but that strong brand and the fact that it represents quality, made in Oregon, made in the USA, used by the military and so forth, has stood its test of time. So you're not dealing with an environment that's utterly changing in 2 or 3 years, like you might see in the high-tech sector. So yes, it's clearly innovative, and things change. Personalized medicine, digital medicine, all those aspects are coming to the forefront. But it's not at a turn rate that you see in many other sectors. So from an employee standpoint, somebody who's very educated, lots of experience, who wants to get into the biotech sector, very, very attractive industry relative to other industries. And when you saw the downturn in the last 5, 6 years, it was incredible how many folks I met with who were just interested in learning about the sector. I would put them in touch with Dennis or another company or so forth, or I would try to help them to the extent I could. But we have an opportunity in Oregon to really try build this industry to be attractive not just to outsiders like Galena moving from Boston to here, but actually to employees in different sectors in this state who at some point their sector might suffer from economic downturns, who then instead of moving outside of state can move to another sector in-state. And we find that constantly. People don't want to leave the state. They've got roots here, they've got kids, they've got family. They'd prefer to be right here. And that's often not the case. So I'd say that's one other aspect. If I can also mention that some of the struggles we do face are with collaboration with academia and medical schools. Oregon has some great institutions, with OHSU, Oregon State, U of O, you name it. But most of our R&D activities and collaborative efforts have occurred outside of the state, unfortunately. And I think part of that is simply because of recognition. There are people on the Hill, there are people in Eugene and Corvallis who are there, but we don't know them and they don't know of us. And one of the things as board chair and the association as a whole that we're trying to do is create better awareness of the association. But I think we can also do with help from the state, from Business Oregon, to try add some momentum around this area. If you know, you've got, I don't know the exact number, but I know it's north of 10,000 employees at OHSU. I cannot tell you how many folks will seek a small company like ourselves and say, I've got this idea. And unfortunately, that idea won't be relevant to our market segments. It's just not something we necessarily feel there's a fit with. But there are folks out there who we do want to find. But unfortunately, the people that tend to knock on our door from other universities, you know, there might be just entrepreneurs in the garage coming up with some idea. There should be a much stronger collaboration between the Oregon University system and Oregon Bio. There is so much potential just within the brain power within the state that it's entirely underutilized. So there's a huge opportunity in that regard. One other opportunity is if you take a look at Oregon Bioscience Association, our sister organization, if you will, the Washington Biomedical Business Alliance, the WBBA, which is essentially the counterpart, if you will, have done a tremendous job growing the organization in the past 5 to 6 years. So Oregon is much smaller. We're about a third the size of the industry in Washington. But what they have done is create such incredible branding around what they do, increase membership levels, and increase opportunities. But that was not achieved without the help of the state of Washington. So not only were they able to do this, with, some impressive membership there, they were supported by the state of Washington just enough to create some momentum. And if you fast forward 6 years to today, you talk about the issue with venture capital, private equity. They actually get a lot of those companies to visit Seattle and the surrounding areas where that wasn't the case 5-6 years ago. So it's not something we should just assume and discount, which is not possible in Oregon. There is a great possibility of creating a similar attraction. That's a huge issue because, as we know, you speak to Tech Transfer at OHSU as an example, many of those ideas that might even end up as a company, as a startup company in Oregon, eventually get transported to California or elsewhere. And that's got to stop. I mean, that's really unfortunate. And I think it can. But my ask of you in terms of the short term is to try assist Oregon Bio with funding that will help with what we are calling the supplied stem. We have that in submission right now. Mm-hmm. And, that assistance will be immediately impactful because we can disseminate that out to the industry at large. I mean, I'm talking about high tech, it could be food processing, you name it. It'll attract folks who are wanting to get into the medical device biotech sector space and allow them to be trained quite quickly. And then that makes it much more attractive to companies like ourselves to say, yeah, we want to then handpick this individual because he's gone through this maybe 3-month or 6-month course or whatever it might be. Those types of opportunities are hugely helpful because one of the disadvantages we have versus, let's say, Texas or Southern California is they can hire people tomorrow, like we're trying to hire, and hit the ground running right away. We, on the other hand, have a 3 to 6 month learning curve because while that individual might have business development experience, do they understand the regulatory side of the medical space? Do they understand the CE mark hurdles when you try export overseas? Do they understand clinical trials? I mean, there's so much that has to be done that we are at a disadvantage relative to other states. So that would be my specific ask. And then I'd also ask, from a non-financial standpoint, just support from the state in terms of just recognizing and trying to promote Oregon Bio, as I know a lot of you have. I know we have a fast-growing sector here. Dennis has done a tremendous job in the last 2 years to energize and coalesce the industry companies that form this organization. We have some strong strategies that we're working on. We're going to be making some changes to that as we try to align the stars. But we have something really special, a very collegial group of companies. I compete with at least one company behind me on some level, but we're exceptionally collaborative. And that's the case with a lot of folks like Welsh Allen and others that we might cross space paths on. So thanks for your time.
Thank you. Are you working with Business Oregon to try to accomplish what you're just explaining?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Right?
Yes, in fact, I was speaking with him today. If what you're referring to is the applied STEM immersion mm-hmm. training that we'd like to do for moving people into our industry, yes. And they've been very generous in getting close to negotiating the seed money to get that started, presuming that the state can work out an earmark later in the session to actually, that they would, the current plan is they would help design the curriculum and prep for the first cohort of trainees. And then if the state follows through with some reasonable level of funding, we would start training those cohorts in fourth quarter of this year.
And then also with the recognition of going through and letting people in Oregon know who you are. That's something else that they do. So I just, when you were talking about that, I kept thinking the Business Oregon is doing this with some other sectors. So.
Correct, yeah.
In fact, the other part of that conversation was that they want to increase the international outreach. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at both AvaMed as doing some step grants to give some of our companies to AvaMed, as well as targeting an international region like South America is an area I think that is very ripe for our kinds of companies to go after. And there's a big event, a big conference in Argentina that I think would be a good launch point for us.
Great.
I just also want to mention we do have one more company. I know we've gone way over time, but this is an exciting company that I think is worth your time to take a quick look at.
I think we want to hear them. Adrian, the fact that we're late here just I think means we don't tend to be very good at holding our questions, so we ask a lot of questions at the beginning, and you did an excellent job covering a lot of ground. So the fact that we're not asking questions is no reflection of our any lack of interest in what you said.
Thank you.
But we appreciate you being here. Thanks.
Joining us is Bernard Fox. He represents Ubivac, which is a well-kept secret for a reason. They are an early-stage company, but very exciting, and I'd like to have you have a chance to hear about what they're doing.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. Ubivac is a homegrown organic orchid company. We were founded in 2005 from technology that was developed at the Earl H. House Research Institute out of Providence Portland Medical Center. And that was our first technology, which is just now getting ready to enter phase two clinical trials to treat patients with advanced stage lung cancer. It's a vaccine therapy, which is what we would categorize as a therapeutic vaccine therapy because it's designed to actually treat a disease and not necessarily prevent a disease. Although there is the possibility that that could happen with this drug as well. It's just harder to test for, and our focus should be on what we could potentially do with it. And all of our technologies are what we could classify as platform technologies. Their application could be applied to numerous types. Cancer is our main focus. It's our core competency. The founders of the company have over 50 years experience in the cancer research field. They also, unlike others, did not quit their day job when forming the company. They brought someone else in to run it and continue to work at Providence and are now developing next generations and newer technologies that could be used in addition to what we presently have. That technology that I'm talking about right now is we term as the Dribbles. Stands for defective ribosomal products in blebs.
Very reassuring.
Thank you. Might not be the final product name, but it works. although it is becoming a little bit more popular than what we anticipated in the scientific community, there's a lot of excitement around it. But it's one technology. We have also worked with Portland State University, also in collaboration with the Early Childhood Research Institute, to develop a nanotechnology vaccine. And all of this was made possible through some local funding, through NAMI, as well as through the NSF and the National Cancer Institute. But right now, the company is anticipating an award of about $405,000 through a Phase 1 SBIR. It's about 2.5 times the normal estimated SBIR size, but we anticipate that with this money, we'll be able to do some preliminary testing of the vaccine, determine its safety profile, develop some good data in animal models, and hopefully be able to move it into human trials within a 2-year time frame. It's been ambitious, but we think we can do it. There's also, out of OHSU, a licensed technology that uses the cytomegalovirus as a vector to go after cancer. But the approach with that is unique, and how it even came to us is a bit awkward in that the doctor who developed it had heard about us, which was kind of a mystery to us because we've been trying to keep a low profile. But she approached us and said, I have this thing. I kind of want to do something like what you're doing. How could we do it? And through those conversations resulted in our company actually taking it on, something that we got excited about. So we've taken essentially three technologies that have been born out of centers of excellence and academic research groups in Oregon. And that way we're kind of a little bit like RevMedix, where we're homegrown, but we're in the same kind of field as what Galena is. So that's a very kind of short overview, but to date the company has received about $3.5 million in funding, again through SBIR mechanisms. We received one of the largest SBIR 2 awards in 2009, which also for 5 years, which was an unprecedented term at that time. But it's what will allow us to actually conduct the phase 2 clinical trial that we're starting now. And it's in our hope that we'll be able to kind of use this to bring in others to help kind of support the activity, because we are a privately held tightly controlled company. Venture capital was not something that would have been readily available to us because of our time frame. We're looking at, optimistically, a 13-year product development cycle, probably closer to 15 when all is said and done, through initial concept, through animal testing, preclinical models, phase one trials, phase two trials, phase three, and if all that works.
I just wanted to interject because I know that there's some interesting data that your team realized early. I think it would be good for the committee if you to scope the size of that market, you know, the vaccine.
Absolutely. So actually, I'm going to just reference here a quote. So last week there was a meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncologists in Chicago. It's about 30,000 plus people were in attendance. And at that, the president, Dr. Sandra Swain, said immunotherapy as a standalone therapy is a tremendous advance. The extensive tumor shrinkage that was observed in this study is exactly the type of benefit patients and doctors have been hoping for. This is truly remarkable. This immunotherapy product category is estimated by Citigroup to be worth at least $35 billion a year over the next 10 years, each year. So that's a huge market, and that's based on existing understanding. It's also believed that immunotherapy products could help at least 60% of cancer types, and that doesn't even include other issues like the infectious agents, biodefense initiatives, things of that sort, the pandemic virus type scenario, for which we also believe our technology would do well in those categories as a platform technology, but is... But again, as it's not our core competency and we have limited funding, our focus has to be directed to what we can do best and the hopes of bringing in kind of greater sums at a later date.
So that's two companies on the same panel, Galena and ours. You know, I'm not an expert on trend analysis, but I think we're emerging in Oregon with a very clear trend towards an area that's going to be very exciting. Combined with personalized medicine, that's two of, I think, the hottest areas in oncology therapeutic research happening right here.
And there's a lot of money that's going into it. Several large pharmaceutical companies are getting behind it. Bristol-Myers Squibb has actually thrown a lot of money and effort behind it. They've created an international group to engage in immunotherapy-type products. There are centers throughout the world. Some prominent centers on the East Coast, and one based out of Portland, Oregon, the only U.S. institution west of the Mississippi to be included in this group, and the organization will be spending billions of dollars to make this happen and to further the development of immunotherapy-type products. It's definitely the direction where the industry seems to be headed when it comes to cancer research, but again, other fields are definitely, other applications to other diseases are there, including things like HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, especially of concern in China, which is something that we are actively exploring because of our close proximity, as well as the ties of one of our founders.
Questions?
So I think this is all fascinating and it's encouraging, but the question, and I know the public often asks that, so when you talk about this time frame, 13 years or 15 years, so is there anything without jeopardizing the potential for positive results that can be done that changes that time frame?
You know, a lot of it has to deal with existing powers that be, FDA regulations, and just the process of determining if something is safe. I will say that I think something that Oregon does very well in terms of at least having the programs. I mentioned ONAMI. There's a good effort in terms of things happening, I think, at the university level. In terms of the transitioning it and being able for companies to procure funding, because, again, this type of time horizon is not appealing to venture capitalists. And if it is, they usually want to move us out of state, which is something that is, for us personally, is not a desirable option. It's our goal to build, if the technology works, vaccine production facilities here in Oregon, and to further expand our research and development arm to engage in the other applications of these and newer technologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Extremely interesting. Why do you want to stay in Oregon?
You know, it's part of it might be that quality of life. It has become home for the founders. But there's,
I think also the type of people it attracts is, they are unique. Maybe they're a bit European, as one of my colleagues suggested. That there is a passion. I think that you generally find in people to explore. Maybe it's part of the manifest destiny aspect of what brought people out here originally. But it is a notion of furthering that. And right now, the next great frontier will be within SADAS, a growing understanding of that. Sequencing of the human genome has led to all kinds of new possibilities, and the price of being able for an individual to do that is dropping drastically. And what that will mean for the future of medicine and biotechnology, to being able to determine risk factors and potential treatments, drug interactions, being able to create companion diagnostics to go with disease with existing drugs to see how exactly the body's responding and why. It's very exciting. There's a lot that is unknown, but all of that data is going to lead to some other discovery, and we'd rather if we can keep that discovery in Oregon, or at least benefit the people here. So, that is it. And I would also point out that we are also submitting for the nanotechnology grant through the Anami Gap Grant Program in collaboration with PSU and Providence Portland for the November submission.
And remember, for the benefit of the community, Anami is the Nanoscience and Microtechnology Institute that is part of the Oregon Innovation Council. We've passed out here is in ways and means as well.
So it's just an interesting combination to be able to bring both the biotechnology side and the nanotechnology side together for a potentially life-saving product.
So I feel like, you have a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I almost hate to admit it, but I have a relative at Baylor in Texas, and when I called him on some issues a couple of years ago having to do with stem cell research, and his analysis was that Oregon is very nice, but it's very small, and you'd be far better off with all the massive amounts of capital and whatnot in Texas. And he's a distant relative. I want to hasten to say an in-law. Anyway, the question is, he raises a point, and that is having available all of the stuff that huge, massive amounts of capital investment provide in, let's say, Texas, mm-hmm. as compared to, let's say, Oregon. So is your future, the one you just described to us, a rational future for Oregon? I mean, is it something that actually can play out here? Or is there some massive amount of investment that has to happen to make it actually happen?
I would say it's not as easy to make it happen here as it is in, say, Texas or potentially California, even with their tax rates. But it could be made even, I think, a little bit easier, and you will find people that want to do something here. There's a lot of education that probably has to happen at all levels, including at the level of the researcher that actually have potential opportunities to further develop their technology, at the level of business people such as myself and having an appreciation of the sciences and being willing to kind of take that risk and entrepreneurial spirit, and in terms of the elected representatives. I mean, science is a very complicated thing. I don't have a degree in it, but I appreciate it. I understand it. I'm fascinated by it. I follow up on it, and since I have learned a great deal about biology, chemistry, microbiology, immunology, but it's an incredibly complicated thing. Obviously, there's no one correct answer. We have businesses of various stages in development here in this room, well-established to very young and high risk. But in order, because of the lack of capital that you attributed to, if it is indeed a desire for Oregon to make bioscience a reality in Oregon, then it is, I think, an opportunity for the state to step up and take some action in that regard to meet that needs. Because, again, the venture capital, if we could get it, they'd want us to move out of state. Mm-hmm. It was the general consensus of a meeting last year that OHSU sponsored. Venture capitalists continually said, we're excited and about this, but we'd like to get you down to California because of access to talent and capital and everything else. But it's not you know, again, it's not for us, and we're now at a point where we're being approached, and we get to say thank you, but no thank you. And we hope to continue that way, but, you know, any given day, that situation can change.
And that really speaks to the importance of the Oregon Growth Board and the Growth Act that we've passed it to try and set up the infrastructure that attracts more of that capital. I've really been struck by that continuing theme throughout the presentations about access to capital. One question for me, if nobody else has any. Things change, of course, but I'm interested in what your view is about your own business model going forward. You mentioned sort of tightly controlled. Pick up on what you just said about people approaching you. Do you see, and the culture that you described, I think I'm picking up on, that's interesting about other clinicians or practitioners who are coming to you now, despite your best efforts to remain anonymous and saying, I think I might have something. Is that a model that you imagine going forward? Is it something that others are doing?
I am working with someone presently who is a longtime friend, also out of Providence, who has developed a technology, and he is deciding to create a company and wants to follow a similar model to what we have, at least for the early stages. Okay. I don't necessarily know if it is sustainable. We're excited by a lot of the things that are happening in Oregon, and if we can further foster and develop that, we're more than happy to. We have great ties with some of the people in the tech transfer office at OHSU, and excellent collaborations at Portland State and the Early Childhood Research Institute. So, I mean, we have no reason to turn our back on them. And they've been great partners, very supportive. We lease space out of Providence because it gives us access to multi-million-dollar facilities that we could not afford otherwise to actually produce the vaccine, at least for this early stage. But in terms of the long-term growth, we know that there's no way we could run a phase 3 clinical trial by ourselves. It would be impossible. We wouldn't have the capital. We'd have to somehow raise that. But our first approach, and one that seems very realistic, is to partner with a larger institution and say, yes, for this particular disease, this particular technology, you'll potentially have the rights in these regions of the world where patents have been accepted, for which at present our leading technology does have patents in Europe, Japan, and are still pending in the U.S.
Almost like the film industry, different combinations of people coming together for specific projects and
exactly.
dispersing.
And it's a way then for us to, we hope, then build, realizing that, yes, the very first vaccine treatment, if successful in lung, may not be fully done in Oregon. But it should provide us with adequate capital to research and develop for perhaps colon cancer, breast cancer, or anything else that or to engage in research into the infectious disease front.
Great. That's terrific. Other questions? Representative
Gorsuch. 242 in Gleason. Port of Portland. You love beautiful view of Mount Hood. Just wanted to say. Thank
all
you,
right.
Mr. Chair.
It's a one-song act. Well, there's no particularly smooth way to end the discussion today, but I found it one of the most interesting ones we've had in the committee.
Definitely.
Really sort of a liberal arts approach today. We got some science, we got some business, we got some
engineering,
philosophy, we got engineering, we got it all in one package, and I'm grateful to you for helping create that. I expect we'll have some opportunities to continue the conversation in the interim in our next committee. And I for one, heard the request about the BioPro program in the Ways and Means Committee. We'll do what we can there. And appreciate you all being here very much.
I'd offer one 15-second thought, which is you asked what kept them up at night. I think what you should go home tonight and think about as you nod off to sleep is what happens when they decide that they can't keep climbing up the down escalator and it's time for them to only have their research team or their management team or whatever in Oregon, and that they do what a lot of companies are doing is virtualize their company. And the problem with that approach is Oregon comes out on the losing end of jobs. We get a few of the highest paying jobs, but all the production, manufacturing, all that goes elsewhere. So with that, I appreciate your time and patience. You have given us a tremendous amount of your time. So please enjoy the rest of your day.
If I may, just one final comment. I'd also like to extend an invitation to any of you and all of you to come up to Providence. I can show you our facilities, give you a tour of some of the exciting things that are happening there, and I'm sure several of my colleagues would be more than willing to open up their businesses as well to give you a more in-depth experience and exposure to the process involved and perhaps meet some of the people whose lives are impacted in terms of the growth and development of this industry.
You all would please leave that information with Troy. I'm sure Troy can make sure that that's available to the committee. That'd be great.
Thank you.
And Dennis, I'll one-up you. Not only will I think about that when I'm nodding off, I'll think about it when I'm getting up at like 1:30 for 1 month also. Thank you. We'll close the informational meeting and adjourn the committee. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman,
as with the sense.